This is an interview with Margaret Hornickel, who was an Army Nurse Corps. Margaret, can you tell us something about the branch of service, where you started with the Army and so on?
Yes. I reported to Camp Lee, which is now Fort Lee, Virginia, in August of 42. To the chief nurse, and was assigned to a duty on an officer's ward. There was no orientation. One learned everything trial and error.
That's
it.
That's getting
that,
thrust into it.
And a few months later, the chief nurse asked me if I'd be willing to do night supervision for the post, for the hospital, which is a cantonment type hospital at that time, and had about 1,000 patients. That I'm not too accurate about. I said I would be willing to, and if she would let me have one night off a week. At that time, the duty hours were 7 to 7. What I learned on that was, in that experience, was so valuable in light of what I was asked to do later, that one cannot get from textbooks. Gave me much cause to think about the personnel for whom I would later be responsible. Now, let me see now. In February, at that time, the Army had a system that one could only be promoted if she were in the chief nurse's office. No one mentioned that this chief nursing office program was preparation for future chief nurses. So, in February, I was assigned to the chief nurse's office and promoted to first lieutenant from the original rank at which all nurses, as far as I know, entered the Army Nurse Corps, regardless of educational or professional background. During the time that I, up until September of 43, it was the usual custom to go to the commanding officer of the hospital. In this time, it was a very fine gentleman with an excellent sense of humor. And one morning we were discussing a new Army regulation that had been sent, and we were asked, it was mentioned, no opinions were asked. But I volunteered one. Colonel Madigan turned to the chief nurse, both of whom were regular Army people, and he said, "Haven't the Russians an Army Nurse Corps?" That was the lesson I learned. Just read the Army regulations. Yes. Never mind having an opinion.
Yes.
That's the one I wanted to tell you about that one.
Yes, very good. If you get tired any time,
that's my back. I squirm. That's. Mm-hmm.
Would you be more comfortable
here, or
with a pillow against me?
In September of 43, orders came for me to be the chief nurse of a hospital that was then activating at Fort Jackson, North Carolina. I think it's in North Carolina, South Carolina, I forget which. But anyhow, I reported there was to take five nurses from the Third Service Command. And we reported there. So the new commanding officer was a commanding officer of the 74th General Hospital. Nurses from time to time were sent and to join that unit. And in the meantime, we all did staff nursing in the hospital there. Now they had two hospitals at that time, and while I was assigned to the chief nurse's office, I supervised a certain number of buildings and wards and reported to the chief nurse. One of the activities that was assigned to me was to teach the WAC ward assistants at the other hospital. With the daylight saving, they came and looked back in the middle of the night to take me with the ambulance over to the other hospital. And I don't know whether so many of these girls were have been on night duty or what, but I never had seen such unmilitary, or for that matter, student behavior in anything. Well, I gave the course in Red Cross nursing, for which I had qualified myself in November or December or October or November of 41, when it was given at Atlantic City where I was teaching. So that was a different experience, and because I thought the WAC officers would have, I expected them to manage their own students a little better than that, and that maybe the old militaristic attitude that we inherited from Florence Nightingale that I've been accustomed to in schools of nursing. So, at any rate, everybody seemed to be happy, at least I was when it was over. And so,
we left
Fort Jackson. While we were there, we were required, some of us, we only had a small number of people to go through the course, we were learned to dodge the bullets.
The gas chamber?
No. We had the gas chamber drill. So yes, that was routine stuff, and interesting message I got one evening in the officers' club was, you'll be delighted to hear the message we received today at the office. That was that the women would not be required to go through that live ammunition combat anymore. The day we'd gone through, they were out of the dead bullets, whatever they're called. I was glad that I got off of that with only one tear in my combat pants, on the knee of a combat pants. I didn't make it through the wires with that one. But then we had orders to leave Fort Jackson. In the meantime, the colonel had, our commanding officer had put in requests for promotions, and there were several nurses whom I thought deserved to be first lieutenants, and I recommended them his suggestion that I make some recommendations. So we had an interesting experience while we were sitting waiting for the train to leave to wherever we were going. One of our officers, that's the administration people, drove up, and I'd been promoted to captain, and I wanted to know who the first lieutenants were and how these captain's bars all appeared. I don't know. I didn't have any, and I don't know that the other girls had any first lieutenants, but I don't know yet how they came about. But we had them. So we got off what turned out to be Camp Kilmer in New Jersey. And only you have lived in New Jersey in the winter have any idea of the experience to come into a camp where they had 1,000 nurses accumulated. This was the build-up for the what was turning out to be the invasion the following June, you know. Well, regular nurses' quarters were no longer available, and we'd left these luxurious ones at at Fort Jackson, and were put in enlisted men's barracks. And when I saw the open work bathroom, kept my mouth shut and hoped we would not have too much difficulty. We had no difficulties. I never saw women, and this turned out to be not only 100 nurses, but 5 Red Cross women, 3 dietitians, and 2 physical therapists. That was 110 women I was responsible for, including myself. So, well, that we went through all the necessary, shipped home our blues, and were issued olive drab, and didn't make any telephone calls. Now, fortunately, I was familiar with that part of New Jersey, so we had the opportunity to go by bus over to New York. I rounded up a few of the girls that that I knew didn't know anything about New York or had ever been on a subway train. And it was quite interesting to see their experience when we went, I think we went down to the Russian, one of the Russian inns to, not from patriotism, but from his reputation. And so we enjoyed that. And there we picked up the bus. I figured that's what we could do from where the bus had left us, and then I knew how to get back to the bus. Got everybody back safely. And the night we left for what turned to be to board the Queen Mary. The rumors were we were going to be on the Queen Elizabeth, but her stack, one of her stacks had a mishap when one of those typical winter storms of the North Atlantic. And so we went on the Queen Mary. However, we stood up in the ferry boat from Hoboken. And I had been across there so many times, I couldn't believe that the ferry captain didn't know how to get to the West Bank. I mean, to the East Bank of the Hudson River. I couldn't believe it. And I only found it out later that it was so well organized. The feeding of troops coming, what I call down the river, I mean from north of New York, from various posts, and these troops coming from the other side into New York. There's someplace along the way there had been a delay, but the Red Cross was there. I don't know what hour in the morning it turned out to be, with their donuts and coffee, and were they welcome? Yes. Then we got put on the Queen Mary, and our colonel was standing at the head of the beautiful stairway, and he asked us where we were.
Where you were.
Where were we? I said, well, we've had the tour in the ferry boat since we left. He couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it either. He was a New Yorker. So that was interesting.
Yes.
And the frequent boat drills, the Queen Mary left around noon, of the 1st of March, and we were in the 3rd or 4th, sometime the 4th or early the 5th morning.
Very quick crossing.
Very quick crossing. It swerved every 17 minutes. It was jammed with soldiers. You could not put your foot down without looking first. Now, fortunately, while we were at Kilmer, I had a birthday, and my father had mailed me a 5-pound box of hard candy, which followed me from Fort Jackson to Kilmer, and I just thought to myself, what am I going to do with this? So I gave it out to the girls and had them put it in their mess kits, because we had to carry all this stuff with us, you know. So it came in handy because we had two meals a day on the Queen Mary. You can't feed all those people three times a day. And nobody needed to eat that long either. So. There were three general hospitals aboard, the ear, nose, and throat chief from our unit was asked to operate on an American soldier who had a mastoid. Now remember, all these things came before the miracle drugs. We did have sulfonylamide, but now people don't know what you're talking about when they're talking about a mastoid.
Yes.
So makes you feel really old. And we landed. We're taking the cross. Oh, it was cold. Scrapping. The Red Cross were on right where we needed them when we got off. And the soldiers were down below, and the nurses were out in the weather on the top. And these boats that they took us off in, and to Glasgow, I think. And then we got on a train and were carried down to a place called Hoy Lake. Hoy Lake is on the Weir, on the Wirral. W-I-R-A-L-L-L, and it's off the Irish Sea. Beautiful little town, and the Royal Liverpool Golf Course is there. We were assigned to various homes, private homes, which the English were paid according to the rank and the personnel they had. And when I was taken to the family that received me, the woman said, she and her husband were sitting in front of the fireplace, got yummy heat. She said, we have no accommodations for a Batman. And I said, Madam, whatever her name was, Mrs., American officers do not have Batman.
Odd that she would expect it.
This lady's son, I bet he didn't know he was lucky. He was serving out in some hot place, India or something like that.
Oh, yes.
I had his room and it was a refrigerator. I had to be moved from it later. I was so blue with the cold. Mm-hmm. Now, another problem that occurred while we were billeted there. Oh, and the English women were marvelous to us. First of all, we were fed in a great big hall. In the army, you're fed wherever you're going or if you're leaving. In between, you know, that's something else.
More on your own.
Yes. But one of the other experiences I had while we're waiting. When they don't know what else to do with you, they have classes and inspections. Well, they didn't inspect, but they did have quite a few drills. And this went on at all the posts. And even there, but finally we were moved, but I had an experience that I rather enjoyed. Chief nurses and certain other officers had to report for I don't really know what the purpose of the course was, to tell you the truth, but I met some very interesting nurses on that course and some other officers, but one of the most interesting ones I met was this young girl who had come off the, was one of those who had come off the, been rescued from what was a corregidor or a battalion in the submarines. She had been sent back to the States to recruit Army nurses when she recovered from that experience they had, and she requested overseas duty. Young, healthy girl. And they had more little things that they picked on us for and called them demerits. And I told them myself, suppose I get a demerit, what? The colonel's not even gonna laugh. You know, some of these things are ridiculous.
Well, what would the eventual punishment be if you
got demerits? Well, that's it. It would be on your record. I guess that
slow
you aren't
down
cooperative.
Promotions.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what it would be. The slowdown for promotions became automatic.
You were captain at this point.
Yes. So, well, that's fine, you see. So, and the war came, and then
they then drop you out of the regiment, certainly.
Well, no, they were a little too scarce because we had to get along best we can. But that's one of the most interesting. Incidentally, during a bombing at that particular experience at that school, that was at one of the famous British Army places down, I don't know, we were somewhere in the south of England, it was south of Liverpool anyhow. I had had an interesting experience at the Liverpool Royal Hospital at Liverpool with the dame there also, but I can't go on with that. You won't have enough time.
Oh, I think so.
I want to get on with when we got to.
I think we have at least 10 minutes. The tape does go up to 45.
Well, anyhow.
But I don't want to tire you.
Well, it isn't tiring me. I'm just trying to sort out what to tell you.
Did you go over with the troops on D-Day? Or
no, we didn't. That's what I want to get to. We were assigned eventually. It turned out to be in May, to a hospital that turned out to be, it was a cantonment type hospital. This means that it was built for the purpose of only from on an estate that lady, I know her name, but the natives told us she wasn't really a lady. The real lady had died, and this was, I don't know whether she was had been the nanny or what, but what her prestige was. But she was not smart enough to get along properly with our colonel, and she came out at the wrong end of things as far as that was concerned, because he was very tactful. And what he and the head of our Red Cross unit were able to get from their friends over in Bristol, England. We were stationed southwest of Bristol. Bristol's the port, and another big hospital, another general hospital, was northwest of Bristol. But that was placed in an English hospital, a children's hospital, which was a proper hospital arrangement. And when I say cantonment type, I mean these temporary buildings, so that they only hold maybe 36 patients in a ward. And then you have to cover them out in the hallway, and you go to the next ward, and you go in the hallway, or when you come to the end of that line, you go down the next line, and it's a whole string of them that way. You do walk yourself, like the New Big Hospital. So anyhow, everything was a great deal of walking, and but the one of the most immediate things that happened to us after we took over from this station hospital had been in there, and they left us with patients who had been brought to them from the African fighting. And we were able to take over from them. And we had all sorts of instructions about how things should be set up, which we followed. And the day that we had what we called a dry run, in which our ambulances and the ambulances of the services in had been enlisted by our colonel from the Bristol authorities, were having the dry run. It turned out to be a real one. Yes. Right after D-Day. Now that area that far away from France had a, I don't remember whether it was called the Z-Zone or the X-Zone, whichever it was as far as you could get. And it depended on whether or not after the invasion took place, a patient could be returned to service within a certain amount of time, or whether he had to be shipped home. So we received and we shipped patients in both areas. And but one of the first things that happened was I got a request to send, the request to send the motor. As you know, three lists of 17 different nurses' names, three lists, and they would select one set of them. This depleted us by that many. And so all you do is, when you're assigning them for duty, is to stretch the nurses between the cantonment of its little buildings. Instead of her doing one, she does two. Instead of doing two, she did three. For night duty, she did maybe six. You see what I mean?
Yes.
We still had 7 to 7 duty, but tried to have 2 days, 2 hours off a day, if they could manage it. And that was all planned in advance so that they would know what they were entitled to and when they would have an afternoon off. You must give them rest.
Oh, yes.
But to have them, you know, everybody was on duty Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. Everybody was on duty, even though you gave them a half a day off. They didn't want to be anyplace else. Because that Christmas, we had just had the Battle of the Bulge. And instead of having 1,000 patients, we had 1,300. Now, we'd already expanded the hospital by building outside of the wards that were there. They put down a patio and they put a tent over it. Where I got the bedside tables for it was through our social contact with a with a Air Force supply group of some kind that just received bombs and delivered them to the other. And these bomb racks made very fine bedside tables, because all we got for to put in these under these tents, and you know how much it rains in England.
Yeah.
And we had no extra sanitation. So you had to have ambulatory patients. the way the patients were sorted was absolutely miraculous. The way that it was done. Now the first day that I say we had that dry run, the patients being carried on these hand carriers, hand stretchers, these were wounded. And what the sick were very sick. And the spaces that were available for the ambulance to back into were very far apart. Well, without saying one word, before the next time we had to have 298 patients we got on each train. Before we got any of those for the second time, the colonel had new parking places arranged. He got that from the English. That's how tactful he was. Whereas the previous people had told us they couldn't get anything from him. So I don't know. We rehabilitated this rehabilitation of patients started very early. It was taught all the way down to our enlisted men. It would be very interesting for me as I made rounds to stop and listen to the little bit of the award meme standing there and say, if you can only move your eyelids, move them. It sounded so cute. Yes, so that the rehabilitation idea. You see, these young men were healthy, but one of the things that was very depressing for me for Christmas was that some of our wounded had been in the States for Thanksgiving. And before Christmas, they had, or during Christmas week, they were wounded. So this was not such an easy war. When you get the word, yes, if you take it seriously. So it's practically ruined Christmas for me ever since. I'm scurrying after the colonel's making rounds. He's visiting everybody for Christmas. And I'm trying to keep up with him. And the young fellow says to me, well, I said, I don't have anything to give out. The Red Cross had been around already. And he wouldn't know what I was giving out. He says, couldn't you give me a kiss? And I said, some other time, you know. He didn't ask the colonel for a good time. But my point is, I know, but I've never forgotten my sin of omission. So, but anyhow, those are little things that just bother me, and I haven't told most people about them. And, but the devotion and the care the nurses gave them was so proud to. When we had patients who were very, very sick, and all I'd have to say to someone, well, I need special nurses for so-and-so, will you cover these other wards while I ask her? Nobody ever objected or felt, let me know that they felt badly or put upon. And it was, it, a great privilege to work with people who were devoted. And that's why we didn't see the mind, and our enlisted men were superb. They really were. I had a few nurses that I had a little few conferences with and pointed out to them that they weren't going to be threatened in their professional lives if they taught somebody how to do something. I mean, this was my idea, that isn't what I said to them. I said, you can't do it all yourself. You can't get any work out of people if they're sick. So, and we seem to be needing them. Well, then as the war wound down, then they had the idea that those units that were overseas or in France, now there were some units that had been in Africa, then went to Italy, and then went to France. Now they'd been overseas a long time and they were entitled to return early. And that's what we call going home by the numbers. You know what I'm talking about. Yes, well. So, now, but one of the things I had learned about on the night duty was that I said to the girls, I'd rather, the Army regulations said that you shall do 1 month of night duty. It doesn't say that you have to do it all in 1 month. And with this weather and this hours, I think it advisable that you split them. And I'll keep, of course, very careful records so that nobody got it too often. And that seemed to work out very well, except with one nurse. And that's a different story. And when we got to France, we were moved from one place to the other, and the colonel said, as soon as we get all the paint done on this place, they'll move us. Well, he was right. I had the opportunity to go to the Riviera. So, since we were again furnishing social hours with a nearby air wings and could get the transportation, I went for a week. Well, it took a little longer than a week to get back. What was one thing and another. In the big time when I went back, the hospital had been moved.
Oh, really?
Yes, I had to find out.
Did you have trouble with tracking them down?
Yeah, a little trouble, I know.
At that point, things were a little confused.
Pardon?
At that point, you know, with the move over into France, things were probably confused here and there.
Yes, because you had no occasion, you just heard of these places, and I didn't get around to recollecting after the colonel said I was about to send the military police for you. First thing, where was I in the ferry boat?
Well, two instances out of, what was it, 4 years?
No, the 40 months, no. No. Well, then sometime in February of 45, I was promoted. The promotions were on again. So several of the officers were promoted, and I was promoted to major. And now that's about, that's roughly the experiences that I had.
I think that covers it well.
Now,
When you went into France, when was that? How much after D-Day then?
It would have been,
roughly.
You want to know about my first night in Paris?
Oh, I would love to hear about it.
On the third class carriage. That's the one with no accommodations. The seats are awful short, too. I've been transferred as individuals on the numbers. And I turned out to be the chief nurse, and there'd been half a dozen majors there. I was around. We weren't taking care of any patients, we're killing time, So, as it turns out, with this outfit that's finally moving an assembled number of people, on the first to know, I'm wrong, I'm leaving France. You're asking about, we went there. French 4th of July is June 14th.
July 14th.
July
4th. That's your day.
Yes. Well, by that time we were in Saint-Quentin.
You were already there.
Yeah, Saint-Quentin.
Well,
yes.
You just say in July.
And that's when I wonder what the holy noise was. 12 o'clock at night. The people in their sabots, is that how you suppose, or their wooden shoes on the cobblestones. They start celebrating at midnight. Of course, that was their first freedom.
Yes. From celebrating the, more than just the day itself.
Yes. So, and the, French countryside, of course, resembled great parts of Pennsylvania and, parts that we saw.
This concludes the interview with Margaret Hornickel, Army Nurse Corps in World War II.